get serious about this podcast. All I want to say is that the scene where Michael Fassbender is kissing his alter self or whatever in Covenant, I'm so like on the edge of my seat and invested in this movie. It's ridiculous, but I'm still in it. You know what I mean?
No.
Wholesale. I'm in it.
The surprise star of Alien Covenant was none other than Danny McBride. And I thought he was fantastic, surprising depth, but the movie sucked.
He's big on the genre.
Yeah.
Do you know this?
Yeah.
Like he did Halloween, the Redux. I think he's like a producer or something like that.
He's a South Carolinian in Charleston as well.
Hey, you hang out with him? No. You play 40K with him?
I do not.
I'll bet. What kind of army do you think Danny McBride has? Kind of 40K army.
Gene Stealer cults all the way. Yeah.
I don't know enough. From what I do know, Gene Stealer cults is probably spot on.
Yeah.
My other guess for him is like a real niche like Imperial Guard.
Maybe.
Like that's his Gene Stealer cult is like his fun army, but like when he really wants to play you, he has like a he has like a really like off meta Imperial Guard or Adeptus.
No, it's Imperial Guard. I will never call it Adeptus Militarum. No, I can't do
Adeptus
it.
Militarum. Yep. No. Actually, I like those. I like those new names.
I don't.
Adeptus Astrides. All right, everybody. This is Pawns the Show. This is episode 5.
Episode
coming
5.
To you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're recording on July 9th. So I think we're holding pretty steady on a schedule.
Well, we kind of dropped the ball a little bit there, but we did have some real life stuff pop up again. So.
Yeah, and that's I think that we started the whole show with that caveat of this is, you know, two working guys trying to do a podcast, so interruptions are bound to happen.
Yeah, how can you get mad at two dudes who make a podcast about gaming with a life when their lives get in the way of them making the podcast? It's
you put that out there, and someone will tell you or show you how they get mad at
I'm
you.
I'm sure.
That.
At this stage, I'd love for somebody to get mad at us to show us that they're listening, yeah.
No, our listenership. Is that a word? It's up there.
It is climbing far more than I expected it to by, you know, episode 5, 4 real episodes. Yeah, we are definitely growing, yes.
I think it's very inspirational.
It's humbling. That one 5-star review we've got that's not mine is I still go back and read that like every third day or so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really touching.
And by the way, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Captain Bruce. Yes, I remember your name. Yeah. I saw it. I've remembered it.
All right, so let's jump into it. I have the feeling this is going to be a short episode, and I think that's okay.
I think
cuz this is our pre-Gen Con recording, right? I don't think by the time Gen Con rolls out, we will not do another episode.
That's definitely going to be threading the needle. We've got just over 3 weeks from the date of recording to when we go for Gen Con.
All right, so let's hobby corner recap.
Yep. Go.
I'll go
You'll
first.
You always go first because I don't like to go first. Gives me a lot of anxiety.
I will happily jump in there and go first. I'm very proud of myself. I've made a lot of progress on the things I've talked about doing. I have decided I'm not bringing the Tau to Gen Con because I really want to do the Tau army. I have like, I think it's a generational thing, right? Where we grow up. Now I'm going to wax philosophical for a second.
Well, I think to say that word and you still pronounced it wrong.
I've been drinking quite a bit. I think with how much social media we have around us and stuff like that, there's this huge pressure to do everything perfectly.
Yes.
And I definitely think my approach to the hobby is influenced by that, at least a little bit. Even if I'm aware of it, I'm still influenced by it. Regardless, so I'm shelving the Tau because I want to screw up models that I'm not so... that don't mean so much to me.
You're not so invested in, absolutely, yeah.
I'm not so invested in, that's exactly it. So I've pivoted to, I've got some push-fit Space Marine Primaris, yep. Space Marines. They're all set. I'll touch on them later. I've picked up a box of Harlequin players. That's a complete kill team right there. And if there's time, I have a box of tactical Space Marines that I think will make a really good, like, jack-of-all-trades kind of kill team to show up at Gen Con with. As far as progress with these guys, the Harlequins are completely assembled, and they are completely magnetized. And I'm really proud of having that done.
That is something to be proud of. I know when you first started talking about Harlequins, I warned you going in that Eldar are a whole different level when it comes to assembly challenge than anything else you've played with, you've worked with, to the point where I don't even magnetize my infantry unless it's something like over-the-top special standout. And Matt, what you have done with magnetizing Harlequins, of all things, is inspiring. Other people should be paying attention to what you're doing right now.
Thank you. They don't look perfect. You can kind of like see like a gap in the, you know, between arm and shoulder. But I'm hoping that with painting, it'll become less obvious.
It absolutely will.
And I'm also, I don't mind learning on these Harlequins, which I'm not so attached to, so that when it comes around time to do like that Ghost Keel model, I can have that magnetized exactly how I want it. So they're assembled, they're magnetized. I'm really looking forward to showing up with these 6-player models and being able to just like pivot out weapons and, you know, setups that I like. And then they're primed. I got a first coat of primer on all of them. And because I'm doing brush coat primer, I have to come around and do a second coat. So I don't know when I'm going to get around to doing that. But I got paint on Harlequins.
Fantastic work, pal. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. My 6 Primaris Space Marines, they are completely done. I mean, they were push fit, so putting them together wasn't too hard. And then I got some paint on them. And then, like I said, I would in the last episode, I waited until the contrast paints were in and threw a coat of those guys, that paint on those guys. And they're technically done. I'll go into detail about that when we talk about the contrast paints. My tactical Marines, I've decided I want the Sergeant, 2 heavy weapon guys, and 4 regular Space Marines. The 4 guys are done. I didn't need to magnetize them. The heavy weapon guy I actually figured out, this is my accomplishment last night. The missile launcher guy, I figured out how to magnetize him. Because the challenge there is his right shoulder, which is holding the rocket, has a cavity.
Yep.
Where he attaches to the shoulder. So you can't really put a magnet in there. So what I ended up doing was I magnetized the other arm and glued his hand to the rocket launcher, like the poses. Yep. So the one magnet up his other arm is holding the both arms up, you know, and I'm really happy that that worked. And if anyone out there is listening and wants a bit of advice, it's because when I finished the Harlequins, one thing I noted is that I only drilled deep enough for the magnets to sort of like sit on the surface and touch. But what I did different for the tactical Marine is the magnet in his torso, I set it in a little bit deeper. So the magnet in the arm pops out and actually sort of like sits into the shoulder. So like locks in. So there's not vertical movement.
Yeah. So the magnetic fields are still interfacing, but you've allowed a little bit more room for the magnets themselves.
Yeah. So the arm magnet like sockets into the shoulder on the torso. Yep. And I think that's allowed it to hold up a heavier load. My upcoming challenge, though, is the combi bolter for the Sergeant. I think the magnets that I have in supply are too big for the bolter, so that's going to be a challenge. I'm debating, do I just go full steam ahead and hope like a push fit will work at Gen Con? You know, if I don't like glue the combi bolter together and just like push fit it in there, maybe that'll work for my purposes. Or do I risk it and order smaller magnets that are going to arrive not by Amazon Prime, so like who knows how long it'll take in today's world, you know. So I'm still up in the air on that. But either way, I mean, 6 Primaris Marines plus 4 Tactical Marines is more than enough to put on the table.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I could technically say my Space Marines are done if I really wanted to. So I'm tabling the Tau for now. And I think I have more than enough on my plate by Gen Con. I did talk to you briefly about using the Gene Stealers in my Space Hulk box, but painting the Harlequins is going to take up all my time.
I know this feeling you're talking about because I've got the same Space Hulk box set in the closet. I could totally get it done too if I had more time. It's just we're down to 3 weeks and it's over. Yeah.
Yeah, we're racing the clock now.
Yep.
I think in the last episode I talked about I'm tabling Dungeons & Dragons until after Gen Con, taking like a summer break. We're playing Mouse Guard now. We're two sessions in. I'm enjoying Mouse Guard quite a bit, although it's a lot more complicated than I expected. There's a lot more rules nuance. But luckily, you know, the group and I are all kind of approaching with the same laid-back attitude, and we're all learning as we go. The one pearl of wisdom I think I can pass on from my Mouse Guard experience is we are using a parking lot rule for rules that we don't understand at the time. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So if we encounter a situation we don't understand, we just kind of vote on, you know, whatever sounds cooler or more fun, frankly. Someone jots down the rule question and then we get to it later, you know? And we look it up and we decide, you know, we find out what we should have done.
Okay, yeah, that's a fantastic way to approach this.
Yeah, and that keeps the momentum going. I'm not ready to do a Mouse Guard review yet. I don't know if that's something that our show is going to do a lot of, like off-the-cuff RPG reviews. But the too long, don't listen of my Mouse Guard attitude is it's really charming. The setting is really gripping. I mean, it draws you in with like cute woodland creatures, and then you stick around for like the actual like Night's Watch comparable setup. You know,
yep.
It's a lot more grimdark than you might have thought.
That's what really struck me as I was reading through the book, and I didn't get it all the way through, but
yeah,
there's a feeling of desperation just running under the current of the whole setting.
Yeah, I mean, for example, in the quote unquote campaign I'm doing. You know, it's taking place right after a failed rebellion against the Mouse Guard, which has stretched the Mouse Guard like really thin. stretched the Mouse Guard really thin, and you know, a lot of the places that the players are going to as a patrol don't have a lot of faith in the guard anymore. You know, so they're meeting enemies everywhere they go, kind of a deal. My one complaint with Mouse Guard, though, is it seems to me like conflicts, if you can't resolve them in like two rounds, because each round is three actions on each side. If you can't resolve a conflict by two rounds, it starts to drag on, you know. Conflict needs to be just a little bit quicker, I think.
Sure.
Yeah. But that's it for me, which it doesn't sound like much, but it feels like it was a lot. Six Space Marines painted and ready to go, Harlequins assembled, and been playing Mouse Guard.
It sounds like a large bunch of stuff done.
Yeah, thanks.
My hobby update is, as anybody who's been listening to the show can probably guess, is centered mostly on Warhammer. I've been assembling, painting a bunch of Dark Eldar stuff. Just today wrapped up another Venom. That's that little five-man transport that... if you do any kind of research into a Dark Eldar list, they tell you the more of these you have in your list, the more likely you are to win.
The better,
and also the more likely you are to lose a friend. So,
What is it about these things that are so...
So, they're super tanky. In the world of Warhammer, everything is run on a 1d6 or a 2d6 occasionally. So, you're looking at about 16% increments of an event to happen. So a Venom is naturally a -1 to hit. So automatically you're that much more difficult to hit.
Yeah.
They're super fast. They have what's called a +5 invulnerability save, which means anything that gets fired at it, I've got a 1 in 3 chance of just saying LOL, it didn't matter anyway.
Which is weird because they look so fragile. I mean, they're just like skiffs, like open roof skiffs. That's really weird. Is it like narratively like they're so fast they can't be hit?
That is exactly what it is.
Got it.
It's the speed and the agility that the Eldar race is known for.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'm buying it.
Just got that done. I got some racks assembled finally. I actually had a chance last week to go to the first annual Warhammer Day. That was a big celebration GW put out. All the local Warhammer stores had a whole bunch of unique, only at this event orderable merchandise. I took the wife with me. She actually agreed to go with me to a Warhammer store, so that was incredibly strange. I got a set of those, the bronze objective markers, those heavy coin markers for, like, they are, I love them. I know I probably splurged a little bit too much, but I got one of those, a set of those big, heavy, beefy coins, and in order to secure my place in the history of the Warhammer world, I did pre-order the Plastic Sister of Battle.
Cool.
Yep. So,
yeah.
I'm gonna.
Is she like regular model size? Like the.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
She's first plastic Sister of Battle ever released. So.
Okay. Do you think Sisters of Battle are so cool? Do you think you would field Sisters of Battle and
absolutely not. No? Nope. I Okay. Right. I've got the Space Marines. I've got the Night Titans, I've got the Dark Eldar, and after that I've got Imperial Guard, and I'm going to look to just focus in on probably the Night Titans, and my Dark Eldar going forward. In my youth, I had hobby ADD, I had Chaos Marines, I had Marines, I had Space Wolves, I had Imperial Guard, I wanted to do Dark Eldar, I always wanted Night Titans as soon as they came out. No, I'm definitely going to laser focus my hobby. I want this model, the Sister of Battle that just got released, because it's a point in history in the game. But
she looks really awesome too.
Yeah, she looks fantastic. It's a beautiful sculpt. But I am not gonna jump on that bandwagon, no sir.
Do you think we'll see Sisters of Battle a kill team?
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
Good. Yeah, I think I would consider. I don't know. I think I'm having kill team ADD because this is my problem. I don't play the 40k traditional game, which is like a whole army.
Yep.
I mean, when I'm talking about a kill team, you can just buy a box
and you're off and running. That's the beautiful thing about the kill team. Yeah. That's probably as far as my interest would go for Sisters, and even they are beneath my interest in, like, say, getting a box or two of Adeptus Custodes and getting them ready. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me pivot to that question then. So, if time wasn't an issue, what three armies would you field in regular 40K?
Oh, it would definitely
be top three.
Top three would be Dark Eldar, Night Titans, and the third one would be harder for me to guess. I would want to do something a little bit more psyker heavy, because I do love the psychic phase. So it would probably just be like an Imperial Soup, you know, Space Marines, Imperial Guard, that kind of stuff.
What three kill teams would you
probably roll with? That's a much easier one. That would be Dark Eldar, Adeptus Custodes, and, you know, I would probably, you and I were talking about this a little bit last week, I would probably end up going with the Tempestus Scions.
I hear those guys are really good. I hear that they're just so adaptable, you know, and they're not expensive either relative to other, like,
that
space.
Yeah, the actual point version is not that bad. Yeah, point cost. Yeah.
I think you're right. I think we'll see. I mean, going back to my first question, I think we'll see at Sisters of Battle kill team rule and like a white dwarf or whatever coinciding as soon as the boxes come out.
The demon kill team rules are dropping the next white dwarf, so there's nothing that's not sacred. Everything's going to be in this eventually. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool because if you buy a demon army, you're good for kill team. You're good for 40K. You're good for Warhammer.
Age of Sigmar. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool way to go about it.
Oh yeah, it's definitely that's Sarah likes the look of the demons because of the duality of being able to play them in, say, 40K or in Age of Sigmar, and I get it.
No, she's not in the room, right?
Nope.
Okay. Do you think if that's her argument, like, I could play it in any game, do you see her actually playing a lot of
No. She is definitely humoring the husband, yeah.
I think my wife would give me the same kind of honey, I could, you know, just do this one army and I can play in whatever game you drag me along to, to play.
Yep, that's all. I love her, but she's just humoring me. I know it.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of dragging the wives along to play, we had our first session of
D&D.
Saltmarsh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, interrupt you. Are you done with your hobby corner?
Yeah. No, that's good enough
okay.
for me.
Okay. All right. So, because, I mean, it is your hobby. You're the DM of our Saltmarsh game.
I absolutely am. It was...
Yeah.
I thought the first session went really well. You guys... What took me by surprise was how into it your wife, Laura, was. And I introduced the big plot hook of the haunted mansion. And yep. You guys went from 0 to 60 right to the mansion. There was so much of, like, all these little minor side stories that just, like, went boop right out the window because you guys just went right to it.
I feel like I feel partly responsible, if that was good or bad, for doing that. But I kind of had the feeling that if I didn't, it would kind of linger there in the tavern setting or whatever yep. forever. So I was like, okay, let's just get along to the plot. But yeah, I totally agree. I'm really surprised at how energetic both of them were for jumping into the game.
Yeah.
And man, you should see, because speaking of reviewing RPG stuff, Laura and I, we both have our own Rook and Raven notebooks for our characters now. And they're like legit, like 2 pages of character sheets, and then like a couple pages for like session notes, pages for like the gear you're carrying. And then Laura took a step further and she got like the spell card holders, and she got the druid spell cards, which, by the way, first time tabletop RPG player, she picks druid as her character class. Like, could she have picked a more complicated?
No. Yeah. It's that jack of all trades type class. Yeah, it can do a little bit of everything, so you've got to know all the rules for everything.
Right, so she's got card holders for her druid spell cards, and she's got spell pages so she can write down notes in the spell pages. And then we went ahead and sprung for the like the animal companion, like little mini character sheets. Like, there's like 3 stat lines on each page, so she wrote down a couple of her wild shapes. Nothing too crazy, Corey, I promise.
I'm not worried.
So, you know, she's got it all there, man. And I think part of the appeal of playing D&D is she's seeing, like, all this, like, the accessory stuff that she can get. Because she loves notebooks and, you know, taking notes about stuff and journaling and stuff like that. So that was, like, her hook into it, you know? And her thing is all decked out, man. It's so funny to like look at her notebook on the table, is like as big as these notebooks can get, you know. And then there's next to it is my barbarian guy, which needs none of this stuff, you know. there's no notebook inserts for barbarian rage damage. No. You know, it's just a line on a sheet. It's like a post-it.
She's having that much fun with it. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I think next she'll be looking at her own dice. I wouldn't be surprised.
Good.
I might look for dice for her at Gen Con. That might be
That's fantastic.
My gift, yeah. But yeah, she's thrilled. And we're playing again tomorrow.
Playing again tomorrow night for an hour and a half or so until everybody gets tired and goes to bed, yeah.
Yep, session 2 tomorrow. And my buddy's joining in too.
Yep.
So it'll be a full party. It'll be very exciting. Yeah.
Terrific.
All right, Gen Con update. We have approximately 23 days away.
Yeah, it depends on where you count. Are we showing up Wednesday or are we all showing up Thursday? Because Thursday is the first day of the con.
I am traveling on Wednesday.
Okay.
Although I should be there in like the early evening. So I was thinking about just scoping it out Stag for a little bit Wednesday night.
I'm going to be there.
Or not,
I'll be there Wednesday.
Oh, if you're going to be there.
I'll be there late Wednesday evening, yeah.
Okay. So. I mean, I didn't mean to like say like I'm not taking anyone along with me, but I just assumed I would be the first one there. So
you almost certainly will. I got 12-hour drive, so
yeah. So I was thinking about, you know, landing from the airport, dropping off the bag, and then heading straight to the convention center to see what I could snipe out.
Cool. Do it. Don't wait for me.
Yeah.
Right. What new stuff have you gotten us signed up for? Because you sent me a couple texts while I was busy working and couldn't pay attention to them.
Did I? Because I kind of wanted to surprise. Well, it's not really a surprise, and it's kind of lame too. Because the only thing I found is a game of Malifaux. Did we talk about this?
You have talked about this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember you.
Malifaux is one of the coolest. I played like back in the first edition, and you know, friends and I would just bought like the starter boxes, so we didn't really get into it. But Malifaux is a skirmish-sized miniatures game.
Yep.
It's Wild West and like Lovecraft horror. What genre is that? Like Lovecraftian horror.
I think Lovecraftian horror is considered Lovecraftian horror. Yeah, I think it's
its own genre. Well, it's like a mashup of those two.
Okay.
So like the guys, I really don't remember, but the guys, the team I had was like this chick, she was like blind, but she had like a really cool sword, and her henchmen were like these grave diggers. And like, they're like, the models are like these like cool gunslinger cowboys, like squatting on coffins. And they're like mechanically in the game, what they did is they could like shove a guy in the coffin and bury them. So like I had like a chance to like kill a guy outright. You know, it's like a one in a million chance, but I think the more they were damaged, like the better it got. Or something. I may be making that up. But the hook of Malifaux is that I think it's diceless. I think it's completely diceless, and you play with a deck of cards instead.
That's right. I remember and, part of reading about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's like a mechanic where you like cheat the game by like sneaking cards in. It's like to tip actions in your favor. And then there's like each faction aligns to like a suit of cards. So if you like do like the right suits of cards, the right numbers, you get like critical damage.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I was looking around at like extra stuff we could do at Gen Con, and I saw this. They had like a Malifaux intro. I think they're on like their third edition by now, so I'm like way out of the loop. But it was free.
So, yeah.
The bummer, and the reason I haven't really been like bragging about it, is that it's just for two people. So I, you know, whatever.
Don't tell Jeff to get lost for a couple hours, Jeff.
I think it's only like 45 minutes too, so it's like super short. Just probably just enough to get you to buy a box, which I'm kind of worried is going to work on me.
If I remember correctly, because I think I've looked at Malifaux in the past, they are known for like ultra detailed minis too. Is that correct?
Yeah. So back when I was playing, they did like all metal. I think it was all metal models that were like really cool looking. But since then, I think they kind of like pioneered or were like right on the forefront of the pivot to like 3D printed plastics.
Sure.
Or you know, yep. And it was a little controversial when it first came out, but I guess that's like what everyone's doing now anyway. Yep. But the models have all looked really stellar, and they're really wild looking too. Again, it's that Western and Lovecraftian horror mashup. Although I think some of the newer factions are kind of like they have like a Eastern themed faction of like samurais and stuff like that. I don't really see that as fitting, but you know, teach their own.
Yeah.
You can still do like your Frankenstein zombies and stuff like that.
Excuse me.
So yeah, that's the only new Gen Con thing. I really have been completely focused on Kill Team.
Yep.
Because we're doing like the one Kill Team tournament, which is really just like one event of many that we're signed up for. And I'm kind of worried that we like signed up for too many.
I'm the more I read about this and the more I look at the schedule, I'm like, yeah, we went a little overboard. We made some first year rookie mistakes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, my worst case scenario would be to go to Gen Con and not know what to do.
Yeah.
And I think the three of us are all laid back enough that if we didn't have a set schedule, we would all be kind of like, you know, spoiled for choice. And you know, it's just like when I play like Skyrim in a game where I can do anything, I don't do anything, you know. So I think it was, I kind of push for it for my own, you know, peace of mind.
Sure.
Yeah, and if it doesn't work, we'll just skip events.
Yeah,
you know, whatever, it's not the biggest deal. So yeah, so other than that, we've been working on getting Kill Team up to speed, but I think we really need to focus on, like, we're doing a Shadowrun game. Have you looked at like the rules for doing like a legal Shadowrun character?
I have.
It's
not.
It's fucking complicated, man.
The more I look into Shadowrun, the reoccurring review I hear of Shadowrun is you have never played in a more interesting setting that has any more terrible rules than this. It's the rules suck, the setting's great. So yeah,
the rules are absolutely terrible. I agree, and I downloaded like it's a PDF to make a convention legal character. It's a whole book of its own. And I don't know. I think we should find like a character building workshop or I'm sure there's something like that there.
Oh, without a doubt.
Or yeah. So I think after Kill Team, my other concern needs to be to like brush up on Shadowrun enough to like help the group out. I mean, you know, like someone should have like at least read the core book. when we go to the table, right?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, But I'm also to understand that the next edition of Shadowrun is coming out this year.
I think I've heard that rumor. So, yeah,
I'm really looking forward to that because I would absolutely love to see them give Shadowrun the D&D 5th edition treatment. You know?
Yeah.
I really hope 6th edition has like an advantage mechanic.
Yeah.
You know, I really do. Yeah. Because I love the Shadowrun setting, but the rules just, they suck. They're just so complicated. And, you know, if that's your jam, that's cool. But, you know, I think that's, you know, true to the theme of the show, the older you get, personally,
yeah,
the less patience you have for that kind of stuff.
I don't have time to read Thaco tables like I used to have it memorized when I was a kid. I ain't got time for that stuff.
Yeah. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about what else we're doing to get ready.
Yeah.
Particularly, man, I've been waiting until this show to ask you, what are you listening to on your drive? I'm doing the hand motion on your drive.
Yeah, the flying hand motion.
Well, it's a hill. You're going up and down hills.
Up and down some mountains in between here and there, yes. You know this. You know, you have spoken so highly of the YouTube video on demands for the LA by Night Vampire 5th Masquerade.
Yeah. That's great.
It's fantastic. I, with my work, can't really sit down and sit at a computer through my work day and watch a lot. But what I can do is I can download a podcast, I can plug in some headphones, and nobody cares what the hell I'm doing.
That's great.
LA by Night has recently released seasons 1 and 2 onto podcast format. I have binged since I had to work Saturday and Sunday. I binged all day Saturday and Sunday. I'm currently on episode 8. And I am loving LA by Night. It is...
What's happening in episode 8? What's going on?
Episode 8, so let me think real quick. The main characters, Victor... See, I even know the actor's face, but I can't remember the character's last name. Victor Temple, Nellie G, and the Bruja, the baby Bruja. I'm forgetting her name.
Annabelle, right?
They just went through that strange Nefandi nightmare realm kind of like thing, the labyrinth.
You're a realm. If you're talking like legit like a nightmare realm, you're past me.
No. This is the... Okay. They went to go find Jasper's Haven.
The sewers. Yep, okay. Yeah. That's. I think that's like the final episode of the first season.
Yeah, it's very close to the final episode. And
yeah, I think that's right where I am too. Yeah,
I love it. I love that there's a star appearance by a werewolf. They kind of hint at the developments that the werewolf line is going to receive here after it gets its time in the sun. It's great. I fucking love it. I love the...
Did you just make a comment about vampires getting its time in the sun?
Oh, I didn't mean that on purpose, but that's it. Yeah, that's there.
Awesome.
I love how they canonize the original Vampire the Masquerade bloodlines. It's a great show. I love it.
Yeah, and you mentioned her name, I forget the actress's name who plays Annabelle. She's fantastic. And I think, because again, I am watching it on YouTube because I can just like run YouTube on my phone all day at work and no one cares. She's a fantastic actress.
Oh, absolutely. Even just with the audio, listening to her emotion, the emotional segment she puts into the show is fantastic.
Yeah, and shout out for the guy who's running it too. He is so...
inspirational.
Cool.
Yeah.
I to the point where I kind of wonder if they have like an agreed upon direction that the sessions are going to go, like maybe not like every little bit of it, but if they're going to be like, okay, this episode is about A, B, and C happening, react accordingly.
Sure.
But he is never like, he is always in control and like in complete understanding of what's going on in the game. And even like adding like extra characters and stuff like that on the fly. He's, what's his name? Is it?
I've drawn a blank on this. Jason.
Well, this wasn't in the notes. We weren't going to like for sure talk about this, but the LA by Night is definitely worth checking out. And at least I'm speaking as someone who doesn't really enjoy watching live play. Yep,
I'm there with you. Actual play podcasts have always fallen flat for me. If you're one of those listeners who's had a problem with actual plays, give LA by Night a chance. It's not just a simple actual play podcast. It is audio drama. It is fantastic. Right.
So do you think you're going to save like season 2 for the road trip or what?
I don't know if I can make it that long, but
Well, all right, well, let's circle back to the actual question then. What are you gonna load on your iPod for the road? Your Zune. You don't know?
I don't know what any of those words mean.
What cassettes are you gonna put in the stereo, old man?
If I am still listening to LA by Night, LA by Night's got a prime place. If I am not, I will probably download a couple Audible books. I'm still slogging my way through the Horace Heresy.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll probably be it. And like some last podcast on the left and that kind of stuff.
Do you think if you could, speaking of like 40K literature, if you could like split from your mind for a hot second your love for the 40K franchise and maybe think, speaking of someone in like my perspective, do you think the books are entertaining?
I can't answer that question with a blanket statement. Some of the books are atrocious.
Okay.
They're terrible. And then you have these gems in it. And I'm even talking about before our, like the Horace Heresy kind of marks this point in time where the Black Library, which is the publishing arm of Games Workshop, like looked at their people writing fiction and said, okay, we're going to start developing serious books that are really good reads. If you go before that time, back to when I was first getting into the hobby in the early 2000s, it was a lot of pulp fiction, garbage, bolter porn is what it's called a lot of the time.
Bolter porn.
There is some gems out there, though, from this time that are just gorgeous. One of the first 40K novels I ever read was a book called Lord of the Night by an author by the name of Simon Spurrier. It details, it is like a mini forecasting of the future in the 40K world, because what it does is it takes a character who was alive during the Horus Heresy, shoots him forward in time 10,000 years, and he's in Warhammer 40,000.
Huh.
He's a Chaos Space Marine. If you are a Chaos player and you love the Night Lords, like I used to love the Night Lords, it's a highly contentious character. Nobody really likes him anymore. But that book, Lord of the Night, even now is a fantastic example of what science fiction can be in our day and age.
It sounds to me a lot like pre-Disney Star Wars, you know?
Yeah.
Some of it's honestly just, some of it's good, but like a lot of, you gotta like sift through a lot of bullshit to get to like the really good stuff.
Just a quick, like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be negative Corey and go on the list of books I hate. I'm going to stick with the book that I loved. I loved the most, right, which was Lord of the Night. There are some gems. There are a lot more gems now than there were in the past, but you've got to do some sorting, unfortunately, because there is a lot of, there's a lot of,
It's like the Wild West. Yeah. It's just, you know, they would probably take on any writer who had an interest.
Yeah.
Which also sounds a lot like Star Wars, like then and now.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Contrast Paints.
Contrast Paints. This was the giant hype Games Workshop has been pushing since, I think, February.
Yeah.
Huge, huge project. Matt, do you think that perhaps Contrast Paints are the paint for the everyman gamer?
I will repeat my analogy that I made while I was first using them. Contrast paints are to talent what Instagram is to modeling. It definitely feels to me, and this is, I'm speaking as someone who like I've dabbled with like miniature painting before and I've never really gotten into it until now. But just to like see, like, remember I did put blue paint on my Primaris Marines.
I remember.
Right. Yep. And then was like completely like, holy shit, this is really difficult, really hard. And then remember when I got my contrast paint in and I was like, okay, let's try it again. And like the next picture I'm showing you is like a completely finished Space Marine.
Yep.
Right. So, to answer your question, yes, contrast paints are the paint for the everyman gamer. Yeah,
I agree. But there's a caveat with contrast paints because Games Workshop's hype machine has struck again. They are indeed the paint for the guys out there listening who have jobs, who have wives and kids. But what they are is they are also hard to find.
That's right. That's right. So, for example, I took advantage of Game Workshop's special.
Yep.
Where if you order like 10 pots of paint, they'll take like 5 cents off. Right? Probably, I mean, again, I'm not really familiar, but it sounds like as good of a deal as you'll ever get from Games Workshop. But literally, like, as I was taking paints out of my shopping cart and putting other paints in and, like, juggling them around to, like, make my set of 10, paints were selling out.
Yep, yep.
No joke. So, like, I took red out and then put in green. I was like, no, actually, I want to take out the red. By the time I go back and look for the red, gone. That fast.
I had to brave the depths of Amazon to even get my hands on some of these. And they were going for crazy prices. I saw some of these contrast paints going for $20 a bottle.
Whoa, did you buy any of those?
I did not. I'm not afraid to maybe put an extra dollar in here or there, but I was not buying a $20 pot of paint for nothing.
And I sorry to interrupt, but I don't know if you would get a lot of value out of these contrast
paints.
We'll get to that.
Okay. The other real thing I was interested in, I noticed, was I was doing a lot of the local shuffle. We got a couple independent retailers down here who do hobby stuff. And I contacted one of them, and the guy was like, yeah, I wish I had contrast paints, but Games Workshop sold out of them, and I can't get them in until the next batch they produce. So this.
How long do you think that's going to be?
I don't know. I was frustrated at that point, and I hung up the phone. That's an exaggeration. I didn't hang up. I was polite, but I didn't ask. But this really puts me back in mind, back in like the early part of 2017, Games Workshop at the tail end of 7th edition Warhammer 40K released a game called Shadow War, which grew into what we recognize now in 8th edition as Kill Team. The pre-orders for Shadow War were so high that Games Workshop actually canceled shipments to independent retailers so that they could fill their own pre-orders. That's how bad their hype machine, their marketing team, is at the edge of their game. They are killer, and they know what the hell they're doing, and they have us all pegged, so...
Wait, I'll throw a flag on that, man. Because remember, we also talked about contrast paints came out around Father's Day and graduation day, right? Yep. Games Workshop, if you're listening... Get at me. At me. Where are we? Pawns the show. Wherever you find social media, we're Pawns the show. You missed the biggest opportunity. Why wasn't there, like, the Father's Day box special where it's a box of whatever, it's Space Marines, Chaos Space Marines, I don't give a shit, it doesn't matter, and the contrast paints you need to get them battle ready, right? One box. Wives, you buy these for your husbands, you know, the father in your life. You give them the box first thing in the morning. He push fits his models together. He throws a coat of paint on there, and he is playing at the Father's Day tournament at the local Games Workshop store that night.
I'll tell you why.
Why didn't this happen?
I'll tell you why. Because they knew
they're not fathers.
they knew they had already sold all the contrast paints they needed, and they all had fat checks. And when it had a spot of tea and a crumpet, and that was it.
You're probably right. I mean, they're definitely not hurting for income by the look of it. But I think that would have been an odd... Because contrast paints are being targeted at people like myself who aren't, you know, who are new to the hobby or just, like, frankly, like, aren't talented or don't have the time or interest, whatever. I think to have... like the mindset of get the box in the morning, you know, like, and by that night you're playing a game.
Yeah. You're down at the store and you're playing a kill team with everybody with your new army. Yeah.
Yeah. It's around graduation day. So if they want to go to like pivot another step further, it was high school graduation, but you know, whatever, like your school colors.
Yep.
You know, like if you order from a .edu email address, and you order like your school colors, we'll give you like another 5 cent discount or whatever, you know. And then you have, you know, your school painted fire warriors or whatever. You know, again, by that night, you're playing a game of Kill Team. Happy graduation. Games Workshop at Pawns the Show. Let's let's talk about it, because this isn't the only time we're going to have these opportunities. All right, Corey. Back to the notes. What are contrast paints?
Contrast paints are functionally somewhere between shades and layer paints. Those are the two big types of paints Games Workshop had released prior to contrast. There's some other types like your technicals and your dries. But contrast is, the way I read it was, I frequently read it was, they were comparing their previous lines of layers, shades, and that type of stuff to oil painting, whereas contrast was more like a watercolor style of painting.
All right, so people out there who are in the boat that I'm in, what this meant to me is when I was using regular paints, it was kind of a sticky mess, right? But when I switched to the contrast paints, I guess the best way I can describe my experience is that it just sort of like flowed all over the right spots, you know? Like for a shoulder pad, I just dipped the brush right into the shoulder pad, pushed it around a little bit, and the ink just sort of like flowed and filled the pocket.
The older way of having to do the painting was you do a base coat, you do a shade, and then you do highlights with the next tint up from whatever your base coat was. And it gives you a real nice effect, and it's producible, but it's a 3 and possibly even a 4-step process. Like Matt was saying, with the contrast paint, it is a one-and-done kind of deal. They're meant to go on a single coat over a white or a gray undercoat / primer. It has the contrast paint is naturally pulled downwards by gravity. It shades and highlights the model at the same time. So you're getting one coat and done kind of deal is the intent with contrast paints.
Yeah, I don't know if, again, in my experience, I don't know if I really buy into the, like, it naturally, like, shades and whatever, and highlights. I don't know if I really saw that on my model, but it definitely did cover it in one coat.
Yep.
It was one and done. And I will say, I already had my guys primed black before the contrast paints were even on my radar, and it definitely shows. The paint must be, I mean, there's probably like a more technical term for it, but the paints are thin.
They are.
I painted my guys ultramarine blue on a black primer, and they are more, they're almost purple.
I did up a couple witches, and I had primed them a gray, not Games Workshop gray. It was, I think it was Privateer Press's gray. Regardless, I think you've got a good solid critique. They do shade naturally through the gravity action, but the highlights are a real muted highlight on the gray undercoat. It's there, but it's I definitely went back with some acrylics and re-highlighted my witches and got them to where I wanted them to be. So
maybe I'm losing some stuff because I used the black primer.
You without a doubt have a slight loss there, but
I don't know if it's enough that I'm gonna like go out and buy new primer. Especially by Gen Con. The Space Marines didn't turn out how I expected, but they look cool. Yep,
they sure do.
And I've just pivoted from doing Ultramarines to doing my own chapter.
There you go.
The Boltramarines. So we already have, I think I got my opinion out there pretty quick. They're not like absolutely magical, but they are easy to use. Yeah. And you get serviceable results.
I agree.
That's my opinion. Yeah. Corey, as someone who has more experience painting and a lot more talent, how do you feel?
I don't think it's a talent. Lot more talent. I think it's the sad fact that I've been doing this for the last 15 years.
All right. So as someone with 15 years of experience under your belt, how do you feel about contrast
paints? I like contrast paints. I like them a lot. I think they are exactly what they were built to be, and that is they are a way for people to get armies to tabletop quality in a quick manner. These paints, they're a great tool for somebody who is either new to the hobby and they're intimidated by painting, because let's be real, painting is intimidating. It's easy to screw up.
Yeah, and these models are expensive.
Yeah.
That's my hang-up. I mean, the fact that I'm looking at my Harlequin players, as like, it's a $40 box, and I'm like, these are my throwaway guys as I learn to paint to get ready for Tau.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of money.
It absolutely is. It's an painting's intimidating. So that's where contrast comes in, is if you're new, if you're intimidated, or if you've got a massive project. I'm talking about the guys who are making orc armies or Tyranid hordes. These are what you're supposed to be using. They're going to get you on the table. They're going to get you looking okay, maybe even good. That's what these are there for. That's why I like them, is it's a way for new players to get into the hobby. They go on. Well, go ahead.
What do you think of using contrast paints to kickstart your models and then touching them off with more traditional stuff?
I liked it a lot. That's exactly what I did. I took two witches, witches / succubuses, because I wanted to build a couple of succubuses for my Dark Eldar army. I did everything with contrast. They came out looking good / okay. I took some time to break out my acrylics, use my acquired skills, and I think I took them from good / okay to really good. Good. So yeah, they're a fantastic way to start and then to add your details in. Contrast paints go on easy. They dry quickly. They provide a real working standard that, from my experience, they give you the standard that, if you're starting off fresh, can take a long time to get to. They're the quick, easy button for somebody new. But these paints, they're not meant for somebody like myself. We've been hinting at this a little bit. I've said as much. I've been painting for going on 15 years now. I'm not the target demographic for contrast paints. So that's how I feel about them, is for someone new, for someone with limited time, contrast paints are exactly what you want. Don't be worried about figuring out which layers you need, which shades you need, which technicals you need. Get your contrast paints. If you're somebody who's been in the hobby for a while, if you're somebody who's got an art background and knows what the hell they're doing, contrast paints work, but they're not meant for you. You rely on your skills and rely on your knowledge.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's contrast paints, and I think that's our show.
Yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up for the night. It's going to be a quick episode to make up for those 2-hour-and-a-half long episodes before.
I mean, this one's only an hour.
Right.
We got there, which is wild. I mean, speaking of, we're on the 5th episode and we're getting, a lot more views and reviews than I expected. These episodes get long quick.
They do.
I don't hate it. And, clearly if our listenership is on the uptick,
yep,
the audience doesn't hate it either. I'm really enjoying this. But on that note, the next episode probably won't come out until after Gen Con.
It's going to be August, probably, before we get a chance to sit down and get some stuff edited, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously our next episode will probably be a Gen Con review, hot wash kind of a thing. Speaking of how we're on the uptick with our listenership, if you enjoyed this show, share it with a friend.
Yep.
If
you like what you're hearing, tell your friends about us, tell the guys you sit down at the table with, tell your buddies at work about it, share us, let us, let them bask in our amazing glow.
So if you want to comment on that, you can email us at pawnstheshow@gmail.com, or you can find us on social media looking for Pawns the Show. Yep. That's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Not Instagram yet. I should have got that done today, but I got busy with yard work. I'm sorry, guys.
No, we're not worried about Instagram. It's okay. All right. So that's it, everybody.
That's it, guys. Take care. Yeah, thanks, everybody, for listening. We